Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the pilots of Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 followed all of Boeing's recommended steps when their plane began to nosedive shortly after takeoff. But they still could not stop the plane from crashing. Those are the early findings from a report released Thursday by the Ethiopian government. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet crashed on March 10th, just 6 minutes after taking off from Addis Ababa. All 157 passengers and crew members died. The Ethiopian government said it based its report on flight data and cockpit voice recordings. The plane's builder, Boeing, said it could not comment until it studies the full report. The company's 737 MAX 8 jet has been criticized since a Lion Air flight crashed off the coast of Indonesia last October. That crash and the Ethiopian Airlines crash have several similarities, aviation experts say. At the center of the crash investigation is the plane's flight control system. Boeing and U.S. officials have said that pilots could regain control in emergencies if they followed a series of steps. Those steps include turning off a system designed to prevent the plane from crashing. This anti-stall system is known as MCAS. It was designed especially for the MAX model. Ethiopian investigators did not name the MCAS system in their report, but they recommended that Boeing examine the aircraft flight control system related to the flight controllability. They also recommended that aviation officials confirm that issues have been fully addressed before permitting MAX planes to fly again.
Thailand's leader traveled to the northern city of Chiang Mai earlier this week to personally inspect areas with extremely poor air quality. Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha ordered government agencies to take urgent measures to fight the air pollution, which has reached dangerous levels. Recently, pollution levels in and around Chiang Mai have risen above those of major world cities known for having poor air quality. In recent days, tests found that northern Thailand had very high levels of airborne particulates known as PM2.5. PM2.5 particulates are small enough to be taken into the lungs and enter the bloodstream. They can cause breathing problems and may raise the risks of heart disease and even some cancers. Recently, the Chiang Mai area has had PM2.5 measurements as high as 480 micrograms. This is more than 6 times higher than Thailand's air pollution safety limits. Air quality experts consider any level over 300 hazardous. By comparison, India's capital, New Delhi, recently reached a level of 228, while Beijing had 161. Much of Chiang Mai's current pollution is a result of farmers burning crops. Many farmers set fires at this time of year as a way to clear land for planting. Agriculture experts say the air pollution is worse this year because of extremely dry weather. The dirty air led many people walking or working outside to wear face masks, and at least two universities canceled classes. Mountains surrounding the city trap large levels of pollution in the area, which is popular with foreign travelers. Prime Minister Prayut said he had met with local officials to discuss ways to reduce the burning activities within 7 days. Measures would cover more than 1,900 places across 9 provinces. We need to work on a long-term solution with understanding from the public, Prayut said. We need time to change the way we grow crops and farm. Tens of millions of people could be affected. He said officials had given out nearly 2 million face masks to people in affected areas. His visit came after widespread criticism of the government's reaction to the air pollution. About 40,000 people signed an online appeal calling for the local governor to be replaced. Chiang Mai officials have resisted calls to declare a state of emergency, partly because the move could frighten off visitors. Earlier this year, Thailand's capital, Bangkok, also had a problem with air pollution. That led more than 400 schools to close and Bangkok's governor to declare a pollution control area. That declaration permitted road closings and limits on use of diesel fuel, outdoor burning, and some building projects. Since then, air quality in Bangkok has stayed mostly at moderate levels. I'm Brian Lin.
In the film Love, of Course, single mother Amy Andolini finds herself alone after sending her daughter to college. But when she gets a job planning the school's Harvest Festival event, she falls in love with Noah Ferris, a professor. The film title tells us that Amy accepts the idea of falling in love. There are many uses for the expression "of course" in everyday speech. For example, we use it to say yes with certainty to requests and some questions. We also use it to show agreement with or sympathy for a speaker. Most uses are good-natured and polite, but a few can be considered impolite. So be careful. You would, of course, want to avoid those. On this Everyday Grammar program, I will talk about good and bad uses for the expression "of course." The first we will explore is as an answer to a request for permission. Suppose you are attending a party with a friend. You need to call home, but your mobile phone is out of power. Listen to a short exchange.
Oh no, my phone just died. Can I use yours?
Of course. It's in my bag near the red chair.
Thanks. I'll only be a minute.
When someone asks for permission and we answer with, of course, we are answering with an emphatic yes. This is a polite way of using the expression. Other times, a person may wish to confirm information. In this next exchange, listen for the answer, of course.
Hey, Alice, are you coming tubing with us Saturday?
Of course, and I'm bringing drinks for everyone.
Nice. I'll bring my waterproof radio.
You just heard me use of course politely. Tone is important for this expression. The wrong tone can change the meaning of course from good to bad. Listen to what happens with a change in tone.
Hey, Alice, are you coming tubing with us Saturday?
Of course, and I'm bringing drinks for everyone.
Oh, okay.
Here, the expression sounds unpleasant and feels impolite. The other person may take it to mean you should already know the answer. Another use for of course involves answering a polite offer. But is this next exchange a good or bad use of the expression? You decide.
Hey, dear, I'm going to the supermarket. Would you like me to bring you anything?
Of course. Bring me a bottle of soy milk, please.
That's not a very nice answer to a kind offer. Here, answering, of course, suggests you think the other person should have magically known the answer. A better answer to a polite offer is either, yes, please, or, that would be great, thanks. For most other questions, it is best to avoid answering with, of course. Such an answer may sound impolite or even strange. For example, suppose someone says, your hair looks wonderful. Did you get it cut? The answer, of course, is not fitting. Again, it may suggest you expect the other person to be telepathic and read your mind. Another use of course, is a way of showing interest in and agreement with what someone else is saying, so it is polite. It can also show sympathy for another person. Listen to this exchange between parents.
This is the third physics tutor who has not been helpful to my son.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I had talked to a lot of people before giving her the job.
Of course you did, but don't worry. Maybe I can help you find the right tutor.
Okay, the last use we'll explore today for of course is a way to show that something is not surprising. Unlike the others, this use is not a response. Instead, the speaker uses the expression in his or her own statement. Here is how it might sound.
And I forgot to bring my umbrella again, so of course I got soaked on my way home. It always seems to rain when I have no umbrella.
Here, the speaker is showing a lack of surprise at their own forgetfulness. Now let's talk about the term, of course not. It is the normal negative form of course. We can use it to say no in a way that shows we are certain, or yes to a polite request. Listen to a quick exchange.
Did you break this glass?
Of course not.
Here, the speaker uses of course not to say very strongly that something is not true. This is only suited to informal situations. But we can also use of course not to answer a request. This only works when the request uses the wording, "Do you mind?" or "Would you mind?" Have a listen.
Hi, Tisha. Do you mind watching my dog for an hour?
Of course not. You can bring Lando over at 3.
In this exchange, use of course not means, I don't mind at all. I would be happy to watch your dog. Well, that brings us to our final thought. If you are ever unsure whether to use of course, the good news is that you can simply avoid it. There are, of course, many other ways to say what you want to say. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The war between the United States and Spain in 1898 was one of the shortest in American history. The fighting lasted about 3 months. Yet that short war led to long-term changes for America. Victory made the United States an increasingly important world power. Larry West and Shep O'Neill tell about those developments.
The United States received several of Spain's island colonies as part of the peace agreement. The most important was the Philippines. Many Americans thought the United States should not have overseas territories. But President William McKinley thought the Philippines were unprepared for independence. He decided to keep the islands and prepare the people for self-government in the future. A Filipino nationalist group, led by Emilio Aguinaldo, rejected American control. Aguinaldo declared the formation of a Philippine Republic, and he started a guerrilla war against the occupying forces.
The rebellion in the Philippines became a major issue in America's presidential election of 1900. The Republican Party renominated William McKinley as president, and it nominated a hero of the Spanish-American War, New York Governor Theodore Roosevelt, as vice president. The Democratic Party, for the second time, nominated Congressman William Jennings Bryan as president. It nominated a former vice president, Adlai Stevenson, as vice president again.
William Jennings Bryan campaigned against the American takeover of the Philippines. He received support from a new group, the Anti-Imperialist League. Members included leading American politicians, businessmen, and writers. President McKinley did not campaign much. He let vice presidential candidate Theodore Roosevelt do it. Roosevelt spoke of America's success as a new economic and political power in the world. He said the Republican Party was responsible. The majority of voters liked what Roosevelt said. They elected the Republican candidates.
The Republican victory destroyed the hopes of many nationalists in the Philippines. With William McKinley in the White House again, they saw little chance of gaining independence. Nationalist leader Emilio Aguinaldo, however, refused to surrender. As long as he remained free, the guerrilla war would continue. 4 months, American forces tried without success to find him. Finally, with the help of a tribe of Filipino mercenary soldiers called the Macabebe Scouts, they captured him. Aguinaldo signed an agreement to support the United States. With this agreement, the rebellion ended on the island of Luzon, but it continued for more than a year in the southern Philippines. Hostilities ended officially on July 4, 1902.
American occupation of the Philippines made the United States a major power in the Far East. As such, it began to develop new policies toward Asia, especially a new policy toward China. Americans had been trading with China for years, but not heavily. As the American economy grew, however, businessmen saw China, with a population of 400 million people, as a great market for American products. Other countries were interested in this market, too. Britain, France, Germany, Japan, and Russia all claimed special rights in parts of China. They began to divide the country into areas called spheres of influence. It seemed these areas could become foreign colonies. Then the United States would be cut off from trading directly with China. To prevent that from happening, American Secretary of State John Hay proposed what became known as the Open Door Policy.
Secretary Hay asked the nations involved to agree to equal trading rights for all countries in all parts of China. No nation, he said, should interfere with the rights or powers of any other nation in China. No one welcomed the proposal, but no one rejected it either. Most of the nations involved said they agreed with the idea, but they said they could not approve it unless everyone else did. Secretary Hay refused to wait for them to act. So in May 1900, he announced that all the nations involved had given their approval to the Open Door Policy. The new policy was tested very soon. Within a month of Hay's announcement, violence broke out against foreigners in China.
The attacks were led by a secret group called Righteous Harmonious Fists. Foreigners called its members Boxers. Boxers hated all foreign influence in China. They organized in areas where foreign influence was strongest. They killed Christian missionaries and Chinese who had accepted the Christian religion. They also destroyed foreign industries, especially railroads. The Chinese government in Beijing supported the Boxer Rebellion. It permitted the Boxers to occupy the capital. The rebellion lasted about 2 months. It ended when an allied force of American, British, French, German, and Japanese soldiers reached Beijing and ended the Boxer occupation.
The foreign powers began to negotiate with China on paying for damages. The United States was worried about the results. It believed some of the nations involved would use the Boxer Rebellion as a way to gain more control over Chinese territory. Secretary of State Hay quickly announced America's policy on the issue. The United States, he said, wanted a settlement which would bring peace and safety to China. The settlement must protect China's territorial rights so it would not be divided into foreign colonies. Britain and Germany agreed. With their help, Secretary Hay got the others to accept money, not territory, as payment for damages. The final settlement forced China to pay $333 million. The United States used some of its share to pay for the education of Chinese students in America.
The results of the Boxer Rebellion and the Spanish-American War made clear that the new century would have a new world power, the United States. And this new power had a president with the political skills to do the job, William McKinley. In September 1901, President McKinley made a major foreign policy speech at the Pan American Fair in Buffalo, New York. He spoke about the importance and the promise of America's new position in the world. The next day, President McKinley went to the fair's Temple of Music. He planned to spend several hours meeting the public and shaking hands.
A young man waited in line to see him. When the young man stepped in front of McKinley, McKinley reached out to shake his hand. Two shots rang out from a gun the man had hidden under a cloth. One of the bullets struck McKinley in the stomach. The president was taken to an emergency hospital on the fairgrounds. He was not conscious. The bullet had damaged his stomach, pancreas, and one kidney. But doctors did not believe he was in danger of dying.
The man who shot McKinley was Leon Czolgosz. Czolgosz was an anarchist. He believed all rulers were enemies of the people. He believed the people had the right to kill them. Czolgosz also was mentally ill. He had tried to join several anarchist groups. They refused to accept him, however, because of his mental condition. After shooting President McKinley, Czolgosz explained why he had done it. He said it was not right for one man to receive so much public honor while he received none.
For 2 days, the president remained in a coma. Then his condition changed. He regained consciousness and was able to talk. He rested and became stronger. Then the president's condition changed again. An infection developed in his wound. It spread throughout his body. In another few days, he was dead.
Vice President Roosevelt hurried to Buffalo. He went to the house where the president's body lay. Then he went to another house to be sworn in as president. He was 42 years old, the youngest man ever to hold the office. Roosevelt declared that the administration would go on as before. "It is my aim," he said, "to continue unbroken the policy of President McKinley for the peace, the prosperity, and the honor of our beloved country."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.